This is Dylan Ward, and you're listening to Pro Lacrosse Talk.
Right off the bat, there's Lyle Thompson.
Courier.
Kylie O'Miller showing off those shifty skills.
Driver driving hard down the alley, and he scores.
What a goal from Josh Bird.
Kayla Trainer fires to score.
You kidding me? By Dylan Ward.
Gets topside. Rambo scores.
Welcome to Pro Lacrosse Talk on the Lacrosse Playground Podcast Network, your go-to podcast for interviews with professional players, coaches, and executives, as well as the latest news and analysis from all three professional lacrosse leagues. Now, here's your host, Hutton Jackson.
I'm here with Dylan Ward, netminder with the Colorado Mammoth, 2017 Goaltender of the Year in the NLL, and the newest member of the War Dogs in the PLL today. Dylan, first off, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
I know Adam is a little bummed he could not be on today. He had some matters to attend to, but we are excited to have you on the show, and we want to kind of dive into pretty much everything in your career. We're going to definitely talk about this trade that just happened, but first off, talk a little bit about growing up in Orangeville, Ontario, and when did you first hop in net?
Growing up in Orangeville, it's obviously a lacrosse hotbed. You know, you're just surrounded by the sport wherever you go. You see nets all over the place. Most of the kids growing up, or a lot of the kids that I grew up with, we played hockey in the winter, lacrosse in the summer. So it was just, you were always with the same group of guys. And, you know, just to grow up in a city with or a town with such rich history in lacrosse and be able to play for the junior A program, which is kind of the goal growing up, is to always one day make it to that junior A level, mm-hmm. was a dream come true. And it's just, it's incredible to see the history and, you know, where the program's going now and how it's still, you know, at the top of the league in Ontario and in Canada, and the talent that it produces year in and year out. It's really special to be a part of. And I know it's got a really strong alumni base. I was really proud of the organization. And it's just cool to be a part of that group. The second part of your question, yeah. The first time I jumped in net. So it's my first year of lacrosse. I was 8 years old. And I was playing player the whole year, and we were getting into our provincial tournament at the end of the season, and our goalie decided he didn't want to be a goalie anymore. Like I said, most of the kids that I played with, I played hockey with in the winter. So that winter, I tried goalie out a couple times. It was more or less when we were trying to figure out who was going to be the goalie. Everyone kind of took a turn. I was pretty good at it. And, you know, once our goalie decided he didn't want to play anymore, it was kind of just, all right, well, Dylan, you've been a hockey goalie before. Put the pads on, you're jumping in. And, you know, to be a little cliche, the rest is kind of history.
No, absolutely. I was an attackman myself, but Adam was also a goalie. So you guys are a different breed, you know, hopping in net and getting shot on. I couldn't say the same thing about myself to do that. But talk about, too, you know, going on to the Hill Academy where you graduated from, which is not just a huge feeder for a college field game, but also for the pro game as well in both the NLL and PLL. So talk a little bit about, you know, how you ended up at the Hill Academy and how that really prepared you for the next level.
Yeah. So when I was in high school, I was attending my local high school, Orangeville District Secondary School. Then going into my junior year, Brody and Patrick Merrill, the Merrill family, they started the Hill Academy a year before, and they're trying to build out this lacrosse program. And basically what they were looking at was to try and build kind of a college preparatory style school that had a focus on athletics. And going into my junior year, they had 1 year under the belt. And then the second year, they were really trying to actually have a field of team to go out and compete against, you know, high school programs. And you know, Brody, the Merrill family, we're from, obviously from the same hometown, and our families are have a connection. And Brody and Patrick gave me a call and was like, hey, you know, you want to come and join? You know, we'd love to have you on board. We're looking for a goalie. We're trying to field the team. We're going after, they literally went after like the best of the best players in my age group. Mm-hmm. The guys a year older than me and the guys a year younger than me. And at first I was kind of hesitant because, again, like I was already with all my buddies at ODSS, you know, had a great group of friends there. And then the Noble brothers, who I'm still really close with, but was super close with at the time, they jumped on and joined on with the Hill Academy. And I remember I was at school at ODSS for 1 week. I just came home one day. My parents put the ball on my court, and I came home one day from school and I was like, all right, let's do this. I'm ready to do this. So that's kind of how it started. That first year, there was maybe 30 kids in the entire school.
Wow.
We had like 18 guys on our varsity team, or on the lacrosse team. There wasn't a varsity or JV. We went down, did an MIAA kind of circuit, played some teams in Pennsylvania, New York, made our rounds, played Brother Rice in Michigan. That was the year that they were the number one team in the country. And we had, you know, a ton of success. And it was really cool to be a part of that, because I remember before our Baltimore trip, it was our spring break trip. All of us were like, what are we getting ourselves into? Because we had nothing to gauge ourselves on. We didn't know how good we were. We didn't know like what we were going up against. We just saw all the names and like UNC and Duke and all these ACC schools and Syracuse and like all these big recruits. We didn't know what we were getting ourselves into. We went down there, won a lot of our games, lost a couple. Mm-hmm. And it was just really cool to be a part of that. And now to see it just explode. And every year, you know, it's hard to turn on a college lacrosse game now, even just watching this past weekend and not hear the broadcasters mention the Hill Academy. And, you know, that's something that I'm really proud of. And again, it's another program that I'm really excited to see where it's come from and where it's going and just the talent it pumps out year after year.
No, absolutely. And then you found your way down in Kentucky at Bellarmine University, where you spent your college career. You finished with as a Tourton nominee your senior year and unanimous ECAC Goalie of the Year award as well. How did that really prepare you for the next level as well?
Oh man, I had an unbelievable time down at Bellarmine. My first year, you know, it was the last year of Jack McGetrick, legendary coach, who unfortunately died of cancer in the fall of my sophomore year, but he kind of brought me on board, had an unbelievable time down there, you know, had a couple seasons in the middle sophomore, junior year that were a little hairy, but overall just an unbelievable group of guys. The school was great. It fit my needs perfectly in terms of like the education side. And the athletic side, just a great group of guys, tons of Canadians that were down there. So we were all kind of going through the same stuff. And, you know, my senior year, things kind of just came together for me. You know, I've told this story a couple times on various podcasts, but I wasn't the starter going into that senior year, that first game against Robert Morris. You know, the coaches decided to go with Will Haas, who was a teammate of mine for the past 3 years. And, you know, it kind of, you know, it rubbed me the wrong way, but at the same time, you know, Will worked his nuts off to get that opportunity. And, you know, I just knew when I had my opportunity, I would kind of seize that moment, got my first opportunity in that first game and just didn't look back from that. And things just kind of fell into place for me. Defense did an incredible job. And, you know, again, it was just 4 years in Louisville was awesome. Got to experience big time college basketball at the University of Louisville and football, Kentucky Derby, great group of guys, great school, great, unbelievable city. So I can't say enough good things about Bellarmine and the city of Louisville.
Absolutely. And then on the box side, you know, you had one MVP of the Minto Cup tournament in 2012. And then you get drafted by the Mammoth, third overall. Talk a little bit about, you know, the dream coming true of being drafted to the NLL.
Yeah, that, you know, that was kind of always what I wanted to do growing up, was to play in the NLL and, you know, watching the Toronto Rock and going to Toronto Rock games. Like, I always wanted to be a part of the NLL and get drafted in the NLL. And you know, I got to thank Steve Govett, who ultimately drafted me in 2013. It's been an incredible, what, almost 8 years now in Denver. I live here full time, got my green card. I'm coaching high school. Like, so it's really like, I am a Denver, I don't want to say a Denver native, but I'm a permanent resident of Denver, Colorado, and I just love the community here, the lacrosse community, and you know, to be a part of the Colorado Mammoth organization it's been incredible, and I hope to be a part of it for a long time moving forward.
Yeah, no, and talk a little bit about the layover that's kind of unfortunately happened because of COVID. How have you kind of been staying ready? You know, you didn't play in the tournament at all. Obviously, you guys were practicing a little bit for the championship series in the PLL. But in terms of the box, like, you guys haven't really been together for over a year now. How have you kind of been staying ready, and how much are you looking forward to getting back onto the floor this December?
Yeah, it's been pretty crazy. And just talking to some of my teammates and other guys around the league, it's just, you know, it's wild how long this layoff has been. And I remember at the start of COVID last year, when they first shut everything down and the PLL didn't know what they were going to do, I remember talking to some guys, and you know, those of us who play like year round, when we were doing NLL, Pro Field, Canadian Box Series back home, like, I remember we were talking, it's like, man, this is awesome. Like, this is like the first time we've truly had an off season ever, right? Because, you know, we're going from junior to college, right? And then, you know, you jump into the program, you're playing year round. So that was like my first time I truly had an off season. I remember the first like few months, I was like, wow, my body feels great. This is awesome. Like, you know, obviously it sucks what's going on in the world, but this is the first time I've truly been able to step away from the game or step back from the game and just like focus on myself and get my body right. Now it's like, what is going on? Like, I can't wait to get back to it. I was really hopeful that the NLL was going to be able to pull off a bubble. Obviously that wasn't the case, but it's just, it's at a point now where I'm like, what, like, when do I get to get back? When do I get to play? And you know, I turned 30 this year and kind of had having the realization that, you know, I'm probably on the back half of my career and who knows how much longer I'm going to be able to play for. I hope it's a nice long time, but you know, turning 30 kind of put everything in perspective that this is going to end one day. So I'm super excited to get back out there and playing with the Mammoth and playing in the PLL this summer. And I just can't wait to be back with the boys and be back with everyone week in and week out.
Absolutely. We're anxious to, you know, see you in Cage very, very soon. And we got to talk a little bit about the trade Ward that kind of got a lot of hype recently because of around the PLL, but a lot of people maybe not know that kind of got, you know, was kind of a running gag starting in the NLL circles. Talk a little bit, tell people kind of how that kind of came to be and kind of how you embraced it as, you know, a running gag. And now it kind of turned into a, you know, campaign for you to get to another PLL team and get a starting role.
Yeah. So it originally started, we have some super passionate fans in Colorado with the Mammoth. And, you know, there's some super fans who aren't super, they aren't big on me. They aren't huge fans of me and my work. So it started with one fan just being like literally tweeting out at Colorado Mammoth, hashtag trade Ward, hashtag fire Pat Coyle. And I remember I saw it for the first time and just had a really good laugh about it. I think I retweeted it and, you know, it just kind of picked up steam from there. You know, the fans from opposing teams, a lot of Saskatchewan Rush fans picked up on it and were like, yeah, trade Ward, get rid of that guy. And it just kind of like, it kind of took off from there. And it's just kind of been a running gag, like you said. And I always get a good chuckle out of it. And then this past summer in the PLL, it kind of just naturally took over when I wasn't playing. And you know, obviously Blaze was playing unbelievable in the tournament. But you kind of just saw it from time to time. It's saying like you'd see the tweet come up, hashtag trade Ward. And, you know, this off season, it really picked up steam again. And the other day when this trade finally went through, you know, I saw a lot of tweets like traded Ward was traded, a whole slew of trade Ward style tweets. So it was, it's been pretty funny to follow along with. And, you know, I've enjoyed it. I've gotten a good laugh out of it.
No, I appreciate how you took like a dig and kind of embraced it. And now it turned into like a rallying cry to get you, you know, a starting level. So let's talk about the culmination with that trade. You know, I think a lot of people expected you to be traded at some point. You know, I personally didn't know if it was going to happen before the season or not. And it happened right at the end of the wire, but were you expecting to be traded? How did that kind of all go through? Talk us through like, you know, the discussions leading up to it. Was it kind of out of the blue or were there more discussions earlier in the off season?
Yeah. So Coach Towers and I had a couple conversations this off season and, you know, I was talking to him about my desire to play again. It goes back to turning 30 this year and just not knowing how much longer I'm going to be able to play at the professional level. And, you know, we had some conversations, you know, we were very honest with each other. He let me know, and obviously I expected this, but he wasn't going to give me away for nothing. So he just wanted to make sure if there was going to be a trade, he was totally on board with it. He just wanted to make sure that they were getting in return what they deserved or what they needed. And I totally got that. And I told him that if a trade didn't happen, you know, I wasn't going to hang my head. I wasn't going to hold anything against them. I was going to show up at camp like I did last year, fight to be a starting goalie for the Chaos. And, you know, we had some great conversations as the off season kind of went on. And after the college draft kind of happened, I wasn't so optimistic about a trade happening. And then literally 10 minutes before the deadline, I get a call from Coach Towers and, you know, he lets me know that there's a trade in principle. They're just waiting on all the approvals and he'll call me back when it gets pushed through. And then, you know, 2-3 hours later, I'm sitting there. I'm like, wow, did this happen? And it's like, what's going on? Am I with the Chaos? Am I with the Water Dogs? Like, where are we at right now? And then I get the call. It goes through. We had a great conversation there. And, you know, I wish nothing but the best for the Chaos boys. I had a great time with them in the bubble last year. And AT was awesome the whole way through. And I wish them nothing but the best. I hope to catch a beer with a couple of those guys throughout the summer. But, you know, I'm really excited to be with the Water Dogs, have a chance to compete for a starting role. And you can't not be excited about this Water Dogs team with the offseason that they had and the additions that Coach Copeland has put together. So I'm very excited to jump on board and get into training camp at the end of May.
No, absolutely. I mean, it's almost like a total makeover for the Water Dogs. You know, they were only an expansion franchise last year, but yeah, we're certainly excited. You know, me and Adam joked that Chaos probably had the two best goaltenders in the world, you know, on the roster. No disrespect to the other great goaltenders in the league, but we're certainly excited to see you, you know, again, on the Water Dogs now having a starting role, as we assume. You know, I know we got camp coming up, but we're very, very excited to see you, you know, with a new start with the team. Going off of that, let's talk a little bit about the international side of things too, because you're an all-world goaltender. You're the first goalie to win MVP in a World Games as well, winning in 2014, and you won gold medal that year. Then the following games in 2018, you guys lost a heartbreaker to Team USA. So talk a little bit about the highs and lows of the international game and your excitement for the upcoming World Games.
Yeah, I mean, first off, what an honor to be able to wear your country's jersey in international play. You know, 2014 was an unbelievable experience. Year out of college, I wasn't playing in the PLL that year. Kind of going into the tournament, not cold, but like not playing in games or anything, not getting these world-class shooters to shoot on me beforehand. I remember going in and it was like, all the talk was about how good this Team USA team was going to be, you know, team of destiny, dream team, compared to the whatever Olympic basketball team that just rolled through everyone. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of nice to have such a young roster, no expectations, no pressure on us. We could kind of just roll through the round robin, work on what we need to work on. And once we got to that gold medal game, it was just like, you know, there was literally no pressure on us. Everyone was like Team USA. It wasn't like, is Team USA going to win? It was how much is Team USA going to win by? Mm-hmm. And, you know, we literally in the locker room, like we just had no pressure on us. We were just, you know, we were it was pretty light. Everyone was just like getting ready for a regular game. And we had our game plan. Coaches prepared us to the best of our ability. And we just went out there and we executed it to an absolute T. And it was an unbelievable experience to be around guys like Brody Merrill and Jeff Schneider, who had done it before. Mm-hmm. And a lot of guys that I've played against, like Mark Matthews and Curtis Dixon, Kevin Crowley. And then be with like guys that I grew up with in the Noble brothers. Right. So like, it was just such a cool experience, top to bottom, and to bring home a gold medal was an incredible honor. And, something I'm truly never going to forget. I had my jersey hanging up in my house. It was incredible. And then fast forward to 2018, you know, kind of coming in as like a quote unquote veteran. Again, we have a young team, and a little bit more pressure, and the way that we lost that game was a heartbreaker. And you know, it was an incredible game from start to finish. The way that it ended absolutely sucks, but you know, it kind of just lights a fire under me for the next world. And hopefully I have the opportunity to play for Team Canada again. Obviously that's a few years away, and you know, there's some really good young goaltenders in the college ranks right now coming up. So I'm obviously gonna have to earn that spot, but I'm excited for another opportunity, another crack at the world championship. And you know, it's just something that I don't take lightly, being able to represent my country.
No, absolutely. And it's always exciting to see, you know, the best of the best, you know, wear their country's colors and go up against each other. We're gonna take a quick break here, a word from our sponsor, and then we'll dive into our 5 and 5 segment.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Today's episode is sponsored by Ducan Supply Co. Ducan is a men's body care brand that features an array of military-inspired products, from their signature big-ass bar of soap to their bourbon-infused beard oil. I personally use their Big Bourbon beard oil that is made with a hint of Buffalo Trace. I like the oak barrel scent that it gives off, and it makes me feel good about my beard, even if it's not as nice as the one that Adam's sporting these days. As an Army reservist, I also love that they donate a portion of their proceeds to U.S. veterans. So go ahead and check out Duke Cannon, use our code LAX10 to receive 10% off your order, and find your own signature scent.
Welcome back to Pro Lacrosse Talk on the Lacrosse Playground Podcast Network.
All right, so welcome back. Now let's dive into our 5 and 5. We'll start off with the lacrosse questions. And the first one I ask, and I'm sure there's a lot as a goalie, you guys have your rituals and your routines, but what are some pregame routines that you have?
So I have my pregame pretty much down to a science. You know, I like to go sit in the stands before a game, listen to some music, just kind of clear my head. Go over my notes I have, mental notes I have for the upcoming game. I'll do that for like 10, 15 minutes. Then I'll go back into the room, get dressed the same way every time, not listening to music anymore, but kind of just keeping to myself. And then when I go for warm up, I like to have warm up be the same every time and as consistent as possible. So that's kind of my pregame stuff.
Awesome. And then number two, what has been your favorite venue to play lacrosse at? And that can be on the box side, field side, pro, international, can be any level.
Yeah. So I would say I'm going to go two ways with this. They're both in Denver. Pepsi Center or Ball Arena is obviously an unbelievable arena. It's the atmosphere is, you know, truly second to none. They truly put on a show and our fans are super rowdy. So it's been awesome to play at Ball Arena and call it my home arena. And then Dick's Sporting Goods at the 2014 World Championship, the championship game, the crowd was massive. The sides were virtually packed. And it was really loud, and there were a ton of Canadian fans there. So that was, you know, those are two of the coolest places that I've played. And then I guess obviously going back, I have to say the Tony Rose Arena in Orangeville. That is like the best arena in junior lacrosse that you can play in.
Awesome. No, that's great. Some good ones right there. Number three, who's been one of your toughest players to face in your career? Maybe it's a player that's just kind of had your number, I guess, in games, and that's been really tough, but you love competing against them.
Box, it's Mark Matthews. He's so good. Whether he's beating you himself scoring or throwing like ridiculous passes, he's such a smart lacrosse player and so fun to go up against and a great guy to compete with and just an unbelievable guy as well. And then, you know, in the field game, a guy that I'm just became teammates is Ryan Brown. That guy shoots the crap out of a ball and you know, he's probably the best shooter in the league in the world right now. And I'm just happy to have him on my team.
Yeah, no, I'm sure you are with that acquisition there. Number four, who is a teammate or fellow lacrosse player that you've leaned on as a mentor during your career?
Wow. That's a good question. You know, a guy that I've talked to a lot being in Colorado is obviously John Grant Jr. Brody Merrill's a guy at the Hill Academy. Like I looked up to him. He's a guy I've looked up to my whole career. Played with him multiple times with Team Canada, box and field, with field. Coached by him in the Hill Academy. So I'd probably go with Brody Merrill as a guy I really looked up to and just watched how he kind of carried himself and kind of learned how to be a pro probably from him.
Awesome. And then my final one is a new one that we're kind of adding. If they made an NLL video game coming out this year, who would you say deserves to be on the cover?
I think right now, the most dominant player in the NLL, I'm going box on this, it's Graham Hossick. The guy's a machine. Mm-hmm. He's like, I think he's a robot. I'm not convinced that he's a human being, but the guy is just, he's the most, you can't deny him being the most dominant lacrosse player in the world right now. And I think the people who aren't familiar with him and the PLL fans or the field lacrosse fans are going to see this summer what this guy brings to the table. And I've never heard more people talk about how hard it is to go up against a defender than Graham Hossick. So I think that's the guy right now.
Yeah. And his nickname is the Cyborg. So yeah. You know, I remember when we heard that he might be signing with the PLL, I immediately shot up to, you know, our draft boards. I mean, I think everyone knew Lyle was going number one, but you know, we weren't surprised just watching the NLL game that he was going to be right there at number two. So certainly looking forward to his return to the field. Moving on to the off the field questions, what are some hobbies or activities you enjoy doing when you're not on the field or floor?
Love golf. You know, try to golf as much as possible. Living in Colorado, we have gorgeous hikes. or trails, I should say. So I love going on hikes. And then this winter, I actually got back into skiing. Again, living in Colorado, I have world-class resorts, 30 minutes an hour from my house. So love, those are probably my big three: golf, hiking, and skiing.
Awesome. And then number two, who is a player in another sport that you admire or enjoy watching?
I mean, Austin Matthews right now, I'm a big Leafs fan. He's just so dominant, and kind of watching him kind of help him and Mitch Marner kind of help bring the Leafs back to the limelight and contenders for hopefully a Stanley Cup this year. He's probably one guy I really enjoy watching.
You know, and they have a great shot too. You know, Canadian teams now being in that division, you have, you know, four teams making it. So yeah, I think the Leafs have a pretty solid shot, especially because, you know, they've had some competition, I guess, between the other Canadian teams, but I think they have a pretty good road ahead if they continue and keep it up. Cool.
Yeah, I was just going to say the it'll be interesting for NHL playoffs because they're all playing within their division. It'll be interesting to see if like one division dominates over the others, or if it's pretty even, just because, you know, it's like the Big Ten right now that we see in lacrosse, right? Like obviously Maryland and Rutgers are leading the way, and the other teams have really bad records. It'll be interesting to see like when these NHL teams play against other divisions, are they as good as their record? Are they worse than their record? Are the other divisions better or worse? What that'll look like?
Yeah, no, I'm looking forward to it. I'm a big hockey fan, so definitely looking forward to the playoff hockey coming up. My next question is, okay, this one's a fun one. So what has been the most interesting way someone has misspelled your name? Because I know you get a lot of name misspellings, which I don't really understand, because sure enough, there's two forms of spelling Dylan, but it's not like it's completely uncommon. We have a rule at Lacrosse Playground too that, you know, you can't misspell certain people's names, and you're on that list because it's just like, I know you'll call us out for it. So I'm like, got to double check, triple check, like can't misspell it. But what has been the most interesting spelling of your name?
I think the D-I-L-L-I-O-N is probably the funniest because there's just no second. It's not Dillian. It never has been Dillian. It never will be Dillian. But I think the funniest one I got was on, I can't remember if it was Lax Sportsnet or the NLL, but it was like the headline had my name spelt right. It was for a video. Mm-hmm. It was like the title had it, or the tweet had it correct. And then the video description, the name was spelt wrong. So that was probably the funniest thing, where I was like, you guys were so close and you blew it.
Missed it by that much.
Yeah.
Number four, what is your favorite meal, and do you prefer to dine out, take out, or cook at home?
During COVID, I've really picked up my cooking game. I really enjoy using my barbecue. Very simple, throwing a couple ribeye steaks on the grill, with some, you know, vegetables, asparagus, and a salad. That's probably my go-to meal right now. If I'm going out, if I'm at an Italian joint, I'm getting chicken parm. And if I'm at, you know, a steakhouse, I'm getting a ribeye medium rare with all the fixings.
There you go. All the fixings. Number five, what's a book or podcast that you've read or listened to recently, or even a TV show that you've binged that you'd recommend? So you can do it. You don't have to do all three. You can do any.
That's funny, because I have done all three, but
there you go.
You know, the book I'm actually reading right now, Extreme Ownership by Jocko Willink and Wilnick.
He's awesome.
And yeah, I'm just in the start of that right now. It's been recommended to me by a handful of people. But it's an awesome read. I'm at the very beginning of it. They're just kind of talking about how, you know, leadership is top down, and you're only as strong as your leader, essentially. And if you're a truly great leader, you can't be blaming stuff on results based on other people. It's, you know, you always have to bring things back to yourself, and what can you do differently as a leader to try and get the results that you're looking for. So far, so good. It's an awesome read. But yeah, I'd recommend that right now.
Awesome. And then my final question, this is not related to the 5 and 5, but what is some advice that you have for a young player looking to one day play lacrosse professionally?
I mean, you got to love it. It's such a grind if you want to play at the professional level, right? You've got to put in a ton of hours. You know, you need to, it's super cliche. You hear it all the time. Like, you need to play when you're not at practice. You need to have your stick in your hands when you're not at practice. You need to be getting reps when you're not at practice, right? But that truly does go a long way. And that doesn't mean like doing drills or just doing shooting drills. Like, that could be like messing around with your buddies in the backyard playing mini sticks, mm-hmm. or whatever it is. But you just need to love the game, because you know, you start a youth, you get to high school, it starts becoming a little bit more of a grind. Then if you play in college, it's a full-time job on top of school. And then in pro, you know, it's all gone. Like, it's all on yourself. Like, if I don't go to the gym today, I'm not going to have a coach yelling at me. If I don't go get reps at some point, you know, I'm not going to have a coach yelling at me or making me run because I didn't do something. Like, it's all like, I need to do this on my own or I'm not getting paid. And especially as a guy like myself, who's a full-time lacrosse player, like if I don't take care of those things away from the PLL and away from the NLL, like, I'm not going to have a paycheck. So you've got to love it. You've got to embrace the grind of it. And then once you get through the high school and college and get that opportunity to play pro, you know, it's all about what are you willing to do on your own, because no one's there forcing you to do anything.
No, I think that's some great advice for some young listeners. Where can people find you on social media, Dylan?
Yeah, so at DillWard37 on Twitter and Instagram. I'm more of a Twitter guy, but yeah, those are my social handles.
Awesome. Well, we appreciate you joining us today. We're looking forward to seeing you on the field in the PLL and on the floor in the NLL coming up. But best of luck training for both those seasons.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Today's episode is sponsored by Ducan Supply Co. Ducan is a men's body care brand that features an array of military-inspired products, from their signature big-ass bar of soap to their bourbon-infused beard oil. I personally use their Big Bourbon Beard Oil that's made with a hint of Buffalo Trace. I like the oak barrel scent that it gives off, and it makes me feel good about my beard, even if it's not as nice as the one that Adam's sporting these days. As an Army Reservist, I also love that they donate a portion of their proceeds to U.S. veterans. So go ahead and check out Ducanon, use our code LAX10 to receive 10% off your order, and find your own signature scent.